Hello, I'm Kaya Willoughby, and joining me is Claire White.
Hello.
And this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, a Nerd Manual. We're here to discuss new nerd creations, how they were made, and explore the roots of the wonderful characters and the wonderful stories. Today we are talking about Suicide Squad, the most recent comic book film to come out. It came out on August 5th, 2016. And it has a long history and series of different comics that date back to the 40s?
50s.
Thank you. Claire will be discussing the history. That's why she knew the answer to that question. And I will be talking about the exciting production of Suicide Squad and a little bit about how Warner Brothers are making their movies.
Can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah, it's a little... Whenever I do production, I feel like a little gossipy. Like, did you know?
But it's gossip that... is everywhere.
No, it's true.
I feel like it's okay.
And it's interesting. So Claire, why don't you tell us about Suicide Squad and where they came from?
Well, the Suicide Squad first appeared in The Brave and the Bold, issue 25 in September 1959. So just barely the 50s.
Just barely the 50s. Were they brave and bold?
They were brave, beautiful, and bold.
And suicidal?
Definitely suicidal. The characters were created by Robert Kinnear, and the artist was Ross Andrew. So this first version of these characters consisted of Rick Flagg Jr., Karen Grace, Dr. Hugh Evans, and Jess Bright. And they were all normal people.
Bunch of normies. Come on, comic books.
Well, kind of normal. They were the last living members of their respective crews, and they were willing to die to save the world and make up for their lost friends. So they were normal people with severe guilt complexes.
Gotcha.
And they fought off monsters and dinos and other threats because the Justice Society of America members had retired because of accusations during the McCarthy era.
I'm a sucker for anyone fighting dinosaurs.
It would be terrifying to fight dinosaurs.
Talk to Sam Neill or Jeff Goldblum.
Yes, Jurassic Park.
They know.
Definitely. I'm not going to tell a lot of stories because I have so much, you know, backstory for all the characters, but I do want to tell this one story because it's good. When we first meet the original Suicide Squad, they're fighting this thing called the Red Wave. And it's a force that's boiling the ocean. Well, the Red Wave turns out to be a dragon that absorbs chlorophyll from the land and freezes things with a touch. So they save the world by blasting themselves into space with a rocket, and they have no means of return with the dragon attached.
That's so extreme.
Suicidal.
That reminds me of Despicable Me 2 and the
villain. Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, there's an extreme villain in it.
Oh.
Also that their villain was the Red Wave in the
50s. In 59. Well, you know, comics in the 50s, and then it turns out to be a dragon. So there were six episodes with this Suicide Squad. In 1987, there's a Secret Origins, number 14, and we actually find out in flashbacks that there's a secret history, and that's that Rick Flagg Jr.'s father, Rick Flagg Sr., led a Suicide Squad before his son did in World War II. Mm. And it was a unit of highly expendable men, basically crazy soldiers they couldn't really control, and they got the name the Suicide Squadron because joining that squadron was like committing suicide.
Gotcha. You're sure to die.
Yes. And after the war, the squad, still led by Rick Flagg Sr., he lived, was put under the umbrella of Task Force X. And a lot of times, Suicide Squad isn't referred to as Task Force X throughout all of the comics.
Yeah, that's kind of what I know it as in reading some comics, is that it's always Task Force X is Suicide Squad.
And this is how it got it, because it was a secret thing that the government was still using.
Gotcha.
Rick Flagg Sr. eventually sacrifices himself to stop the Nazi war wheel. And his last words are that he wants his son to take up the leadership mantle in his place.
Why would you want your son to join a squad known as the Suicide Squad?
Maybe because no one can do it as good as the Flags.
I guess.
Patriotic duty. This is the late 50s. So Rick Flagg Jr. takes over. He's the leader of this squad. And in 1987, you find out what happened to the Suicide Squad that I was talking about in the beginning, the original Suicide Squad that DC wrote.
From 59.
Right, the one that Rick Flagg Jr. is on.
Yeah.
And I know this is confusing. So they're fighting this Yeti in Asia, and two of the four squad members, Bright and Evans, fall off an icy cliff while battling him. Karen Grace and Rick Flagg Jr. survive.
Okay.
And the squad is ended from there.
It's disbanded.
It's disbanded. Bright does survive. That's a whole nother story. He gets saved by the Chinese who mutilate him and turn him into some sort of villain. And
like
he eventually
cyborg?
Becomes, they cut off parts of his body. And he eventually becomes a villain that's out to destroy Flag because he thinks Flag left him to die.
A lot of tragic stories in comics.
Yeah, very, very dramatic,
yeah.
I think is the word.
Yeah.
Especially in the 80s and especially in the 50s, 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess they're still dramatic now. It seems more heightened then because I'm not used to it. So the Suicide Squad that we would recognize now, created of bad guys who are expendable, was first introduced in Legends Issue 3 in 1987, and it was created by John Ostrander.
Okay. So the Suicide Squads prior to this weren't bad guys, necessarily.
They're no,
just
they were heroes.
People.
Yeah. They were just heroes who had guilt complexes.
With nothing to live for.
Nothing to live for. So the squad was created because this high-ranking government official called Amanda Waller, who is very tough on crime, wanted to revive the program, but do it with supervillains and then promise them freedom if they worked for her.
Okay.
And so she assembled a new Task Force X, and Rick Flag Jr. was brought back as the commander under her. So they had a good guy leading a bunch of bad guys.
Leading bad guys. Gotcha.
The original members were Bronze Tiger. He's a martial artist, anti-hero, who does fight for good but does it in bad ways. Deadshot, who's one of the best marksmen in the DC universe. He's an assassin. Captain Boomerang, who has no superpowers, but he's really good with boomerang.
That's one of my favorites.
These three are consistent in all of this version of the Suicide Squad. Everyone else comes in and out.
Yeah.
But the rest of the original team is Blockbuster, who has superhuman speed, strength, and stamina. The Enchantress, who is this lady named June Moon, but she's also a sorceress.
Yes.
When she summons the Enchantress, and she's always battling her two personalities. Their first mission was to take on Brimstone. He's a bad guy who can create balls of fire and incinerate things on touch. And Deadshot manages to take him down with an experimental laser rifle. Blockbuster does die, and that's a theme throughout the Suicide Squad, is that these people are expendable. They do die. It's Suicide Squad for a reason.
It's still suicidal to join them.
Now, Amanda Waller, who's the government official in charge of them, she's an anti-hero. She's trying to do good things with them. On the other hand, she manipulates them and doesn't always use them well.
She's like a classic politician where, like, sometimes she'll be doing good things, but she's dirty.
She's pretty dirty. Well, she tries to keep them all captive and under her control, even though she promised them freedom if they fought for her. But Flag comes in and says, no, you promised. So she gives them their freedom after Flag raises a stink. But what happens is that Captain Boomerang, who's basically usually the worst person on the Suicide
He's
Squad.
He's like the biggest jerk.
He's a huge jerk. He goes on this crime spree. He gets caught. He's going to get executed publicly. And then he threatens to reveal the Suicide Squad if they don't save him. So Waller wants Deadshot, the really good marksman, to just kill him. But gotcha. Flag works out how to break him free without hurting anyone. Because gotcha. Flag is the good guy.
Yeah, yeah.
After this, Waller takes her case to Reagan, who's the president. And he decides to allow the team to operate, but on a provisional basis.
Okay.
So basically, we'll see how this goes.
Yeah.
I don't like this idea, but this could be good.
Pragmatic Reagan.
Yeah. And, he's not portrayed well. And Waller sets up headquarters in Belle Reve Prison in Louisiana. And this is where the Suicide Squad is pretty much always set as well.
Yeah.
The squad, throughout its time, undergoes several changes. People die, people leave, people come back.
Yeah.
Non-supervillains join from time to time.
Really?
Yeah. They work with good guys, too.
Yeah.
It ran for 66 issues and had 9 story arcs. And in the end, Waller disbands the squad.
Okay.
Now, the squad didn't make appearances throughout the DC universe. I'm not going to really talk about them.
Yeah.
They weren't hugely significant. It didn't really become significant in the big way again until the New 52, which was basically a reincarnation of DC Comics where they rebooted the whole universe in 2011. This version is by Adam Glass with art by Federico Dallocchio and Ransom Getty. So in the New 52, this is a complete reboot of the DC universe.
Whole clean slate.
Right. So the Suicide Squad has never existed before. And this Suicide Squad is formed because Amanda Waller, who, by the way, is younger and sexier in the New 52.
Love it.
Well, a lot of people didn't. But that's a whole, that's another podcast right there.
Yeah.
She forms the Suicide Squad because a mission that she's on goes wrong and she's forced to kill a teammate who's been turned into a monster. And because of this, Waller wants to create a team of expendable soldiers who deserve bad things to happen to them. And people who have nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Gotcha.
So she forces a bunch of inmates on death row to take part in a series of tough tests. They get tortured, and this is to evaluate their loyalty and value. The new members of the Suicide Squad slash old members are Deadshot, still there.
Gotcha.
Black Spider, he's the ninja anti-hero who kind of takes the place of Bronze Tiger.
Bronze Tiger, Black Spider.
Yeah. El Diablo, and he can create fire. Voltic, who can generate and project energy. King Shark, who is basically a
half man, half shark.
Kind of. He's super strong, too. His flesh can't be pierced.
Yeah.
He's scary.
Yeah.
And Harley Quinn, who is one of the most popular characters in the DC universe.
She's basically
Joker's girlfriend. She's very acrobatic. She's crazy. Really good fighter.
Yeah.
And she puts bombs in their necks so that if they do anything wrong, she can just kill them.
Waller puts bombs.
But Waller does.
Yeah.
Yes. And I should mention that in the earlier version, in the 87 version, the really bad people had detonators strapped to their arms. They take this a step further in the new 52.
A little bit extreme.
They usually go after and capture high-value targets. So, for example, in their first mission is to recover a newborn baby who carries the cure to a deadly viral outbreak.
Yeah, I actually read that, the New 52.
Yeah, I liked it.
I really liked it a lot.
I read the old one, too. And I enjoyed the old one. I think the new one is more the sensibilities I'm used to.
Yeah,
so I was more comfortable with
it's
it.
It's the comics you're used to, and maybe the artwork you're more
used to. Yeah, and the text that I'm used to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so this New 52 version ran for 30 issues and then it was canceled. There was another relaunch in 2014 by Sean Ryan and Jeremy Roberts. It wasn't particularly popular. And just this month, DC again relaunched their universe.
Their whole universe.
Yeah, it's called Rebirth.
Right.
So there's a new Rebirth Suicide Squad by Rob Williams and the artist by Jonathan Galepian and Philip Tan. I read it. It looks promising.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious, because I really liked that volume you lent me, which was the New 52 Suicide Squad. So, Rebirth?
It's dark, and it's interesting, and you don't have to like everyone.
Yeah, and people die, too, which is nice. I mean, not nice. It's nice in comics to see some, I don't know, maybe I'm painting a bad picture of myself right now.
Well, why don't we move on to production, Kyle? I'm actually really excited to hear all about this. It looked really juicy.
Yes, yes. Let's move away from me enjoying the people dying in Suicide Squad to us enjoying the, I don't want to say Hindenburg disaster of Warner Brothers. That's a little strong, but it has. I have seen it compared to that in articles I've read.
Yeah, the press has been having a field day.
Yeah, which I honestly isn't accurate. You can't say that Warner Brothers is having like some sort of meltdown.
Because the movie did well.
Because they're still making money. Yeah, yeah. So let me tell you a little bit about the production of this movie. So as we said before, the movie was released on August 5th, 2016. This year, it's directed by David Ayer.
Now, tell me about David Ayer, Kyle.
Let me tell you a little something about David Ayer. Actually, he's actually had a pretty cool life. I wish I could get more into it. He was originally from Illinois, but he grew up in a couple different places. He ended up moving to L.A. fairly young to live with his cousin, and that's kind of how he started getting into the movie business. But before he was really in movies, he served in the Navy. And until Suicide Squad, he's mostly worked on either kind of cop dramas, mostly set in L.A., or war movies. This is one of his first movies that is not about cops or war.
I can see how that transition would be the one to make. Suicide Squad would be
and
an
he
easy
says
jump.
He says he's a big comic book fan too. He's not just like he's no Bryan Singer.
Bryan Singer is a comic book fan. It's
but
just
he wasn't in the beginning when he was hired on for X-Men. But that's a different story. Anyway, Ayer's last movie before this was a movie called Fury, which took place in World War II.
The Brad Pitt movie, right?
Yeah, it's about a tank crew in World War II in Germany. And he worked with an ensemble cast for that of a lot of fairly big names. Brad Pitt, obviously, super big. Shia LaBeouf, a lot of people know Shia LaBeouf. John Bernthal, who I think at the time wasn't as big, but has gotten bigger
the
now.
The Punisher, right?
The Punisher.
In the Daredevil TV series.
Logan Lerman, who was in the Percy Jackson movies, and he was also in Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Okay, I know the name. I'm sure if I saw the face, I'd recognize it.
And Michael Pena, who's also
he's an Ant-Man, right?
He is an Ant-Man.
Yeah.
So Iris has worked with like this ensemble crew of fairly big names before. So Suicide Squad seemed like a pretty good fit for him.
Right.
Where he's working with an ensemble crew of a lot of big names. Now, one of the problems that this film had when it started was just its schedule and how rushed it was going to be. So Suicide Squad was announced that there was going to be a Suicide Squad movie. Warner Brothers announced this in the fall of 2014 without really having that much of the ball rolling yet.
Like, okay.
They kind of had Ayers on as a director.
They announced it for 2016 in 2014.
But they had made all these merchandise deals and branding deals that caused them to have this like really tight schedule to get this movie out. Ayers had to write the script in 6 weeks. And right when they finished writing the script, they went right into the movie. Like no rewrites or anything.
And the Russo brothers, can you remind me, how long did they take to write the Captain America Civil War script?
It was either a year or over a year.
I think it was over a year.
And I think it was over a year, too. So
Just to compare.
So Ayers didn't have a lot of time to make this script. And what time he did have, there wasn't a lot of editing. He couldn't go back and, like, it wasn't fully formed right when they started shooting, I don't think. So after Batman vs. Superman came out.
And the movie had already been made, right?
And the movie had already been, I'm pretty sure, almost entirely shot, or if not entirely shot. After Batman vs. Superman came out and kind of got lackluster reviews, Warner Brothers started to panic. And one of the big things that people criticized Batman vs. Superman for was its really dark tone and Zack Snyder's, like, broody gloominess. And they were like, oh, crap, oh, crap, oh, crap. Because David Ayers had made what they saw in their eyes was a broody, gloomy, dark movie.
Right. And Suicide Squad is dark, especially when I was talking about the New 52 release. That is a dark comic.
Yeah, yeah. It's
which the movie is based on. I didn't mention that earlier, but this is mostly based on the New 52 Suicide Squad.
Exactly, exactly. Now, the reason that Warner Brothers was getting so worried about the tone thing with the David Ayers movie is because they had released two Suicide Squad trailers, one at Comic-Con in 2015, San Diego Comic-Con, for Suicide Squad, which people loved, and it was a dark trailer. It's my favorite trailers of the like three or four that they released. Now, the second trailer they released, which was in January of 2016, a little bit before Batman vs. Superman, was a little bit more lighthearted in tone. You know, they play a Queen song, there's jokes.
We'll release both on the Facebook page so you can see the difference.
So they were like, uh-oh, are people watching that second trailer with the Queen song and seeing it, a light, funny movie, are going to go see this Suicide Squad movie and see that it's dark and depressing and are going to hate it? Is that what's going to happen? Because they hated Batman vs. Superman because it was dark and depressing.
It was dark and depressing.
So this is when kind of the mad scramble at Warner Brothers starts. Warner Brothers execs, getting worried about the tone of the film, step in and kind of start stepping on Ayers' toes about what the film needs to look like. And the film had been shot at this point already.
Right, and Warner Brothers is normally a hands-off studio.
That's kind of what they're known for, letting directors do what they want. That's why Zack Snyder, away with Batman. No one watched that movie before it came out. So Warner Brothers steps in, takes Ayers' film, gets a bunch of different people to do multiple cuts of this movie, like edit it and kind of change the tone. And at one point they had seven different versions of this movie.
I didn't know it was that many.
It's a lot. And one of the cuts they had was done by the company Trailer Park, who makes the trailers.
I heard about this.
So they're like, yeah, you made a good trailer. Come here, cut this movie and see what you could do. They eventually narrowed it down to two different films. There was the more Ayers cut version that the director had a lot more say in. And then there was the one that the studio liked the best. And they did little test screenings with audiences in North California with these two movies. And the audiences kind of wrote what they liked and what they didn't like. And they took that and they kind of compressed what audiences seem to like into one film.
Oh, and that's what we have now.
And that's kind of what we have now. And they had to recall a bunch of the actors just a couple months before the movie released to do reshoots and get some more, like, lighthearted, fun stuff in there.
Yeah, I remember reading about that at the time, and everyone was like, oh, no, like...
Yeah, what's the
trouble? What does this mean?
And there is a thing, like... Movies do reshoots all the time. That's something that's really common. You know, that you'll have to, like, maybe one shot didn't turn out very well and they want to do it again. But movies don't always have seven different cuts of the same movie.
Really?
Not to my knowledge, anyway. I mean, if that is the norm, I don't know why there's so many people talking about it happening with this movie. They're like, yeah, Warner Brothers, they had seven different cuts of the film. So, for what it's worth... Ayers, who seemed like he had a terrible time, like it seems like this must have been a really stressful time, has never really gone out and like trashed the studio. And
right,
like,
and not his fault
guys.
At all.
Yeah,
just like the studio freaked out about someone else's movie.
Yeah, and his is a dark movie, and we'll talk about this in opinions that maybe it would have been better as a dark movie. So Ayers is still presented and is presenting a united front with Warner Brothers, how they're like so happy and so proud to have worked on this, and he loves this movie, and he's really proud of everything that happened with it. A source close to Ayers, who remained unnamed in a Hollywood Reporter piece, said that he was pulling his hair out towards the end of filming this movie and getting this movie up to speed.
It sounds like you would.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, maybe that's true, maybe that's not. But still, he never went out and trashed the studios, which is very unlike what director Josh Trank did, who...
directed Fantastic Four.
He directed the most recent Fantastic Four movie.
I wish we were doing that this podcast back then, because that would have been a juicy movie to do.
Would have been a juicy movie to do. It was apparently a nightmare. The studios were stepping on Josh Trank's feet a lot, but he was also apparently a terrible to some of the actors on set. He also trashed the studio in a tweet saying that, like, I made a really great Fantastic Four movie that no one's ever going to see, but I guess that's Hollywood politics or something like that. And he's kind of now a pariah of Hollywood directors.
And that didn't happen with Iyer?
No, it didn't happen with Iyer. Iyer kept his cool. One thing, though, that kind of sucks is Iyer was supposed to maybe be doing this movie with Warner Brothers called Bright, starring Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And after Suicide Squad, Warner Brothers were like, and they passed on it.
Ooh.
But luckily for him, it was picked up by Netflix. And
so people still want to work with him.
Yeah, people still want to work with him. And Netflix, at least from our Stranger Things podcast, seemed to give pretty good directorial freedom to their people.
Yeah, they do, from what I understand.
So next I want to talk about Geoff Johns. And Geoff Johns is important because he is now filling the Kevin Feige role in the DC universe.
Which is...
So Kevin Feige, for the Marvel Disney Universe, oversees all their movies and makes sure that everything is lining up, like continuity is
right.
Is
he kind of oversees maintained. The TV shows too, right?
Yeah, he does oversee the TV shows, but he's got someone else, Loeb beneath him, who oversees the TV shows, I think, a little closer. So yeah, Geoff Johns is now doing that for DC, and it's a wonder it took DC this long to have someone in that position.
Yeah, especially because they were kind of copying Marvel's strategy to have this interconnected world.
Yeah, it really took them a long time to copy that winning formula, but they've finally done it, so that's good.
We hope.
So Geoff Johns seems like a legit comic book nerdy guy. He's kind of the architect of the DC TV show universe, which is an interconnected universe.
Right, and it's doing pretty well.
And which does pretty well. I don't watch any of the DC comic book shows. I'm not huge in the CW, but they get good reviews.
You don't like boys with no hair on their chest?
Not so much. Because waxing is painful. I don't want to have to do that.
You don't have to.
Yeah, never mind. but some of his comic writing creds include the Justice League and the New 52,
mm-hmm.
which you were talking about, Claire, New 52. Shazam, also New 52. Green Lantern, prior to the New 52 and after New 52. He had a writing credit on Batman Earth 1, which is a standalone Batman comic. He also has done an episode of the Justice League Unlimited, which was one of my favorite shows for a long time, and I still like that show a lot. And he's written for Arrow.
Justice League Unlimited is a TV show, right?
It's a TV show. It's an animated TV show. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's written for Arrow. He's written for Flash.
Okay, so he knows the world very
well. He knows
well.
The world very well. And the first movie, DC movie, that's going to have his fingerprints on it is Wonder Woman.
Okay.
So that'll be a good kind of measurement to see if it's working. He actually is going to have a writing credit in Wonder Woman. When he came on, he rewrote part of the script.
Yeah, I'm nervous about Wonder Woman.
I know you are. A lot of people like the trailers.
I know. It's too much slow motion. It's too Zack Snyder for me.
I'm a sucker for anything set in World War One, so I'll probably see it. But Suicide Squad is crushing it financially. It's doing really, really well. Its opening weekend wasn't as large as Batman v Superman's opening weekend. Batman v Superman opened at $166 million. Suicide Squad opened at $133 million. Now, Suicide Squad has done better its first week after opening weekend than Batman v Superman did. So the Tuesday after opening weekend, Suicide Squad set the record for the most tickets sold for the Tuesday after opening weekend ever. And that includes beating out Civil War, Marvel Civil War, and Age of Ultron. We're recording this before its second weekend, so it's hard to say
and
what
the staying
power is
going to be.
Right,
and that is a big indicator of how audiences really reacted to it is if people go back and see it. Or
exactly.
Word of mouth.
Exactly. Rotten Tomatoes scores, Suicide Squad has a 26%, which is lower than the critics' Rotten Tomatoes score for Batman v Superman,
by
which 1%. Is at a 27%. However, audiences like Suicide Squad more than they liked Batman v Superman. Suicide Squad's audience score is at 71%, whereas its Batman v Superman's audience score was in the 60s, low 60s. So, critics hate it. Fans mostly like it. Still making a ton of money.
Yeah. What did you think, though,
what
overall?
Did I think of it? I liked parts of it. But learning about how it was cut up so many times made sense, because this is kind of a schizophrenic movie.
Yeah, I actually like David Ayer so much more after hearing all you had to say about him.
Yeah, there. It's watching it seemed like there was a movie in there somewhere. But that's not what we were getting, really.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I resented being there.
You resented being there.
Yeah, it also, I was telling the people I saw this with, that I felt embarrassed for the actors, that some of the dialogue they had to say was so
bad. I've had the same feeling at times in this movie. I really loved Margot Robbie, though.
Yeah, and nothing against the actors themselves. I didn't really have a problem with anyone's performance.
She played Harley Quinn, and that was a big fan thing, that like, oh, Harley Quinn's finally going to be on screen, and it's tough shoes to fill, and I think
she was great.
Killed it. And Will Smith is just charming as hell all the time.
Will Smith is always charming.
So, like, watching them on screen was great.
Right. I feel like maybe the way they cut the movie was like, just be Will Smith. Because I think we can sell that.
Yeah. Who can't sell Will Smith? But even with these two great actors, like, doing really well and being really charming, it's movie still kind of fell flat for me. End of the world all the time. I'm getting kind of sick of
it. Yeah, this isn't a huge giveaway. Basically, they're stopping the end of the world.
They're stopping the end of the world.
And I feel like that's just such a misuse of Suicide Squad, because I feel like, wouldn't you have Batman stop the end of the world?
Yeah.
I mean, Superman is dead.
In this universe right
now.
Right now.
Spoiler if you haven't seen Batman be Superman. But, like,
Suicide Squad shouldn't be doing that. They should be doing the dirty job.
Yeah, the Flash. Where's the Flash? He's obviously around at this point.
Yeah. So, it's just getting a little old how everything is.
Yeah, and
the
buildings
fate of
being leveled, cities being leveled. Yeah.
And I really wish we could have seen the original director's cut of this film.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what that would have been.
Maybe it wouldn't have been any good. Like, who knows? But
you told me there's a list of all the scenes that they cut, and it's significant.
There is a significant list of scenes that were cut and changed from
like plot driving significant scenes.
And we'll post a link to them.
Yeah,
they're
pretty spoilery.
They're very spoilery, so we don't want to get into too many of them now. Slight spoilery warning for this: in the cut scenes, Joker and Harley Quinn's relationship is not depicted as picture perfect.
That actually really bugged me in the movie,
because
I feel like that's a big part of this universe, and Harley Quinn and Joker, that is not a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
And in the movie, it's pretty
true love.
Yeah,
true,
like true
weird
messed
love.
Up love between two murderers.
Yeah, but it's not supposed to be a healthy relationship.
Yeah. Oh, I really wish that had made it in the movie.
Yeah. So, I mean, props to Ayer for keeping his mouth shut and not, like, going after the studio.
It also makes sense, because I feel like this did divert a lot from the comic book, and how these characters were portrayed was diverted a lot. It was very different from the comic book. And if he is a comic book guy, it just sounds like he wrote something that was much more true, and then it got twisted.
Yeah. And the first trailer they released to this, I loved. I loved that first trailer. It still gives me chills. And that was kind of the darker trailer. So to see what that the darker movie that that trailer was made for, I don't know. It's just a shame that we'll never be able to see it.
Yeah. Also, I want to talk about the DC process versus the Marvel process of filmmaking.
Yeah, a little different.
Yeah, because we talked earlier how DC is kind of known as letting the directors do whatever they want. They have a lot of freedom.
Except on this film.
Yeah, they panicked on this film, which is how you make Chris Nolan's Batman.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. They just let Nolan...
You give Nolan a Batman.
Yeah,
and he'll give you something.
Do what you will with it.
Yeah, I mean, great. It's also how you get... Zack Snyder.
Yeah, Zack Snyder doing
Batman v Superman.
Yeah, yeah.
But with Marvel, from what I understand, this is quoting you, you're a cog. If you're a director for them, you're just a cog in their machine.
You're a cog in a machine. And like if you can be a really good cog in that machine, but if you want to maybe be a little more creative,
Yeah, because this is the world that they've created. They know where it's going. Yeah. This is the direction. Oh, and your vision fits with us.
Yeah.
And I mean, in a sense, it's really cool because they'll take people who aren't relatively well-known and be like, we have everything.
Give them a chance.
Yeah, we can work big crews. We can work the budget. You just have to show up and direct.
Yeah, that's with the Russo brothers. That's what they were, you know? And they love working for Marvel.
As far as we know.
They seem to.
Yeah, they're on movie 3. So
that's pretty good. Joss Whedon, on the other hand, who did a bunch of Marvel movies, says he's not going to direct for
them. They were too hands-on.
Because he's, you know, Joss Whedon's a weird guy and likes to, you know, get kind of weird and freaky and creative in his movies. And
maybe Marvel wasn't so into it.
Maybe they weren't into it.
Yeah, or he wasn't following their script.
Yeah.
And also, I think there's the difference. Like, we're talking about how hands-on Marvel is, and you could compare that to DC getting really or Warner Brothers getting really hands-on with this movie. But Marvel had the vision from the beginning. I feel like Warner Brothers was like, oh, cool, you want to make a Dark Suicide Squad? Yeah, make that movie. Oh,
people might not want that.
Maybe people don't like that.
Yeah.
After we've released another dark movie.
Yeah.
And also, so we recorded a Batman v Superman podcast.
That just never saw the light of day.
Never will see the light of day. But I looked up some notes from here, and basically, Marvel, right before Marvel, made the exact same announcement. In 2014, DC announced that they were going to do 10 movies between then and 2020. But the difference is that the only movie that DC had made before this announcement was the first...
was Man of Steel.
Man of Steel. Whereas this was 2014. The Avengers had already come out for Marvel.
Marvel was in full swing, man.
Yeah,
the golden age of that empire.
And they had a plan.
Yeah.
So it's just this thing where DC is always just trying to like keep up with Marvel, at least in the film world. And they, like you said, 6 weeks to write the script because they didn't have a plan in place.
Yeah. And it's they get a lot of DC gets a lot of criticism for being darker, and Batman v Superman was dark, and I think Warner Brothers took that too much to heart. Batman v Superman wasn't a bad movie because it was a dark movie. It was a bad movie because it was a bad movie. And Suicide Squad could have been a great movie and a dark movie.
Right. It could have. If anything, it would have been a better movie because it was dark.
Yeah.
It would have fit the theme.
It would have fit the theme a lot better. And I feel like DC could, and Warner Brothers could capitalize on doing more dark superhero movies because the Marvels are kind of lighter, but they just can't.
Yeah, I think the DC universe is a little bit darker in general.
It is. So we'll see what Geoff Johns, who is the director of the DC Cinematic Universe, we'll see what his fingerprints look like.
And Patty Jenkins.
Yeah.
Who is the director of Wonder Woman and the first female director of a comic book movie. Maybe all they need is a feminine touch.
Maybe that's all they need. So, DC, I guess we will see you in 2017.
June 2017.
June for Wonder Woman. Hopefully, it will be a little more exciting. Thank you all so much for listening. Once again, I'm Kyle Willoughby.
And I'm Claire White.
And we are Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, A Nerd Manual. Feel free to contact us on our website at dsrapodcast.com. We would love it if you could rate and review us on iTunes. You can find the show on Twitter at DSRA Podcast. I can be found on Twitter at Klex303, that's K-L-E-X-303.
I can be found at Along With Claire, that's C-L-A-I-R-E.
And you can find our producer James at James Fowey Jr. on Twitter, that's James Fowey, F-O-U-H-E-Y-J-R. You can learn more about Suicide Squad and maybe some of the deleted scenes from the original Ayers Cut on our Facebook page, where we will post some of our show notes and articles. Our producer, who loves roast beef more than he loves most humans, is James Foey. Our logo was done by Patty Hyland, and I think she also enjoys roast beef, but she cares about people. She's caring.
Yeah, she does.
She's caring lady. And our theme was composed by Pete Rowan, who cares neither about people nor roast beef. Once again, this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, a Nerd Manual. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.